Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Welcome to Podcast Deluxe, your 70% grasp on the English language of Weekly Cultural Review. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at The New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at The New York Times.
Theme week, some interesting things happening in reality television, a passion of ours. This is a passion of ours. We're going to be talking about the most recent season of Love is Blind, season of Traitors, current season of Survivor, some big picture reality TV ideas. This is your comfort. I know there's a lot of comfort for you.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Are we in a new golden age of reality television?
It's a legitimately fair question. I can only possibly assess that question by
taking a sip
from the podcast mug.
Yeah.
On Zazzle. I think we're in a new age of sentience about reality television.
Yep.
It's really like reality television has come alive. I do think like the intersection of real life and reality TV, the way that those timelines play with each other, has created a new framework for what a reality television show actually is, particularly in the dating space.
Yep. So also in the traitor space.
Yes, absolutely.
Lots of social media.
Which I know less about. I know more
from
about
the participants themselves.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's really what we're seeing. We're seeing participation in social media, but also discovery, fan stalkings, etc. Yeah. So should we start with Love is Blind?
This is scary.
It is scary. This is the rest of my life.
Time will tell if I'm bride-to-be or bride-to-be not.
All rise, please.
Now, this is more my thing than your
thing. You love this show.
I mean, what's not to love?
You've seen all six seasons?
Yeah, I've seen all six seasons. I think the thing that Love is Blind is understanding now is obviously the emphasis on the postgame.
Sure.
To the pregame. Falling in love, I think maybe seasons one and two, it was like very romantic. It's like, damn, they're really falling in love in slow motion. Like
extra slow
motion. Yeah, like really slow motion.
Yep.
And now it's kind of like, yeah, let's just hurry up and get to it. Let's get to the honeymoons. Let's get to the fights. Let's get to going back to Charlotte.
Let's very quickly go back to Charlotte.
Here's my first question. Is Love and Blind an act of violence against second and third tier American cities?
All of reality TV is about, when it's not about the big city,
yeah,
it's not the
hills or when it's not the city. Shout out Whitney.
The real stories
are out.
Are in between.
Yeah. I do feel like there's been some narrative, and there always is, of like, oh, people are just going on the show because they want to get famous, mm-hmm. or they want to become an influencer, or so forth. And you have to think, if you are in Charlotte, like an attractive person in Charlotte, mm-hmm. but you're like, this is where I've made my life.
Charlotte 8.
Yes. Or a 9. But like, you think this is where I've chosen to make my life. There are not loads of opportunities for you to really level up.
Did you?
And then Love is Blind, like helicopters into town, right? And says, you end your relationship. Go get stuck in the pods. Like, and how can you resist?
Did you clock on Clay's vision board the TikTok logo?
Yes. Yes.
Like, that's what we're working with.
Honestly, the most coherent thing about Clay is the vision board.
All right. Just in case someone does not know
the premise.
Experiment. I also love that they insist it's still six seasons in on calling it the experiment. Like, imagine how many times the producers say, no, not show,
experiment.
Not game, experiment.
Well, frankly, like, in contrast to...
Does the scientific method cover...
Well, there's a bit in contrast to Married at First Sight, which actually does feel like much more of an actual experiment. Like, there is some academic somewhere cooking that up. But, like, Love is Blind is just...
All right. The structure of Love is Blind.
Okay. Two sets of pods, like rooms, isolated rooms, lined up against each other. men on one side, very heteronormative, yeah, men on one side.
I mean, gay Love is Blind is going to pop off.
Absolutely. Men on one side, women on another side. Everybody dates each other but cannot see each other. And the premise is that you will fall in love from the dulcet tones of Jimmy's voice.
Jimmy's voice did work.
Honestly, did more work than the rest of his body.
It's like speed dating, but without seeing each other.
Right.
Until you settle into...
I'm dating two or three people. Flow. Right. Like, I found someone I connect with. I found someone I can tell about my dog, so on and so forth. And obviously, people choose partners that they would not probably likely choose in the real world. You agree to be engaged, and then you meet. You are presented face-to-face. And I would say two-thirds of the couples, maybe more, are like, hey, you're so beautiful. You're so cute. Like, you're so handsome.
Yeah.
And then there's always, like, a slight percentage of, like, what did I get myself into?
I mean, like, the bit, like, the gag of the show, the elephant in the room is, like, you're going to fall in love with someone ugly, and then you're going to have to wrestle with yourself. Like, yes. That's, like, that's at its basest, that's what this show is, right?
Yes.
Like, you're like holding your breath when they do.
That's
finally
the point. Is your only breath, although you obviously know as the viewer.
But you're still like, is this person going to lie, or am I going to be able to tell that they're lying?
Do they look like Megan Fox?
We got to litigate this because Chelsea
the answer is yes.
Chelsea has gotten unfairly.
The answer is
yes. Do we want to do this right now?
Yeah, let's just go right to it.
The main external news cycle about this season of
certainly
Love
in the first wave. Yeah.
Is that Chelsea, one of the contestants, claimed that she looked like Megan Fox, which she did not do.
She said that she had been told.
She said, I don't think this. People only say this to me at my
job. She was being modest.
She said, people only say this to me at my job.
Don't get excited.
Say it.
It's MGK. I don't even know if it's MGK's wife or his girlfriend.
Megan Fox? You're saying you look like Megan Fox?
It's just because I have light eyes and dark hair. That's the only reason. There's nothing else.
But she was lying.
She couched it.
But she was lying.
A lot.
The couching was lying.
But he heard, I look like Megan Fox. And
the couching was lying.
Because you think she does.
No, the couching was lying because I think she thinks that the answer is yes, but she didn't want to be like,
I look like Megan Fox.
Yes.
She set it up fairly.
She pre-hedged.
She hedged very fairly.
I totally agree.
Jimmy heard Megan Fox and you remember the first thing he says? Can we get married?
Yes.
Like, this is the other thing. The great thing about this exchange is before she says Megan Fox, do you remember this?
Tell me.
She says, it's MGK's girlfriend?
Yeah.
She identifies Megan Fox via Machine Gun Kelly, which, welcome to 2024.
You mean pop punk pioneer Machine Gun Kelly?
Yes. She resembles, you know what she
Thank
means.
Thank you for your service.
You know what she means.
Absolutely.
In a way that everybody who thinks they look like a celebrity.
Sort of like
it's not, it doesn't mean like you are the celebrity. Yeah. If you were Megan Fox, you invented the way that a young me looks like Fox.
Tobey Maguire? Like, like not like that?
Yeah.
That's like way more real.
Fine. I'm just saying. She did a lot of things wrong on this show, but she did not oversell looking like Megan Fox. He says she lied to me.
Yes, but also like Jimmy's relationship to truth telling and kind of like Jimmy's feeling, he feels very put upon.
Yes.
So anyway,
get out of the pods. they're engaged.
There are five couples that make it out of the pods. Now, I can't imagine what it's like to be stuck in pods and sort of think that your only escape route is to fall in love with Megan Fox on the other side of the thing, or alternately to fall in love with Jimmy.
Right. But they also get to hang out with
the guys hang out with each other and like have a little bit of testiness with each other. The women hang out with each other.
And they're competing.
Yes. And do you feel like I feel, because I used to feel this on like extremely early seasons of American Idol. Mm. When they got to the top 24, I'd be like, only eight of these people are really the winners.
Right.
Like, the other people are there strictly so that they could be eliminated without there being too much stress. Do you feel that out of the 15, 5 to 10 are essentially sidekicks?
I mean, I don't even think they get to sidekick level. Like, you just don't know who they
are. I only think of them as sidekicks because in the after part of the show where they're like all hanging out, right. They'd be like, oh, it's my girl from the pod. And you're like, who?
Exactly. They're only there as sounding boards. That's
I do feel like definitionally there's some number of people each season and their entire job is to be the BFF.
But.
So anyway, sidebar, just throwing that out there.
Some people become characters because then they leave before the coupling. For instance,
shout out Matthew,
the greatest character of the season.
Honestly, I haven't seen nearly enough. We should qualify this. We're taping this, unfortunately, about a week before you're going to see it. The reunion show is tonight. If Matthew comes out, like try to court AD, if he comes out with the flowers, I'm like, I'll be sad that we didn't get to talk about it. But Matthew
should be the Bachelor. Like the Matthew arc, phenomenal.
Short but powerful. Like Matthew.
Yeah, yeah. No, Matthew.
Yeah, is he tall? Like he's diesel, but is he tall? But is he tall?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. I always want.
They're always laying down. Like everyone on Love is Blind is just like.
And then in the confessional.
They'll be like, my job is so bad.
Yeah. In the confessional, they're on the chair. And I always want the gag to be like, they stand up and like Tory Lanez are shorter than the chair.
So. You know?
Like. We'll just play that clip. I don't know Matthew's height. I really hope he comes at the reunion. We'll know by the time you hear this episode or watch it on YouTube.
Please do.
Like and subscribe.
Just like and subscribe. Yeah.
But his arc was phenomenal. And I love how he's like an outcast both among the women at first and then also with the men. He's really taking advantage of the notebook. So they all have a notebook with their name on it.
And he like
the Love Island water bottle.
Yeah.
And like, I want a forensic accounting of everybody's notebook.
I agree.
Like, that's, I feel like,
why is that not bonus content? Or why can't, you know, like every season of Survivor, you can buy the props.
Yeah.
Why can't I buy the Love is
Matthew's
Blind
notebook?
I'd pay a few hundred bucks for that.
But I feel like there's definitely a lot of them that are like teenage Moleskine vibes where there's like, someone's name on the first page and then like hearts on the second page and then nothing. You know, whereas like I feel like some people are really taking notes to remember who's who and how they feel about each person before they get to know them really.
And up until this point, the only post-show Matthew arc is he went online and left a comment on some video that was like, one of the things that was really challenging for me is I am sober and I went through this experience sober. So that made it doubly hard for me to connect with the other men who were like, by and large,
people are drinking. Twisty. There's a lot of wine.
Absolutely twisty. Also, the gold glasses.
Right.
Someone did a deep dive on this. I don't remember. Have you read this deep dive?
Yeah, I remember it from a couple seasons ago.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So someone did a deep dive on the gold glasses, which is, I assume, are designed to obscure who's drinking and who's not drinking
and what they're
drinking. Yeah.
It's reminiscent of the, and as are the notebooks, the Love Island water bottles, you know. Just a constant prop. And you're like, is it straight vodka? Is it Gatorade? Are they just staying hydrated in the sun?
The glasses follow them out into the world, like at restaurants. Like, can you imagine like part of the contract with a restaurant is like, we have to film at your restaurant. Here's one thing though, a non-negotiable deal point.
Podcast mug.
Yes. Coming soon. Okay. As someone like, I watch this more than you do. Tell me, you have never watched
this? I have. I've seen maybe two of the other seasons, of other seasons. I find the show quite boring.
It like as
a
narrative.
Yeah, it takes a really long time to get going. I'm not especially moved by the casting. It's a very Netflix reality show, like in the way that Netflix shows all have like the same sheen. Mm-hmm. Netflix reality shows and the type of people they cast all have a matching sheen. Like they really have there's a vibe.
Because even the people who feel like outlier characters to me, who are the main characters on this show, somehow have been sanded down. And actually, you don't. Like, for example, like Laura and Jeremy this season. Like, I feel like as things were unraveling between them, you really saw the intensity of the weirdness on both sides.
Yeah.
And yet somehow that had been smoothed out, or Jerame, as I've been taking to call him.
Yeah. It's Jeremy French. Spelled like Gary, the Golden Bachelor.
Yeah.
Just like totally.
Literally.
That's not how you spell the name.
No, it's like literally drawn from like a French population registry somewhere in like the south of France.
And you're like, see Jerome. It like 20 times every episode and you're like, it's a typo.
Also, you know, people like Amy and Johnny, who, again, it's like almost can't get a fix on them. They
seemingly had a great relationship.
Yeah, they're like they're the winners.
There was no content.
No,
because they never fought.
No, literally. Well, except about maybe
fertility.
Maybe Johnny is not aware of the existence of condoms.
the birth control conversations were strange, and it really felt like they were like, we don't have a plot line for these people.
Please keep talking about this.
And it was like tied to his early retirement dreams.
I mean, great. Who can relate? Okay. Let's talk about Brittany and Kenneth really fast.
Okay. So there ends up being five main couples.
Brittany and Kenneth, that make Johnny and Amy, Jimmy and Chelsea, Clay and AD.
This is impressive.
Jeremy and Laura.
It's impressive.
Jerame and Laura.
And I will say, Love is Not Blind for very long in this show.
No, of course not.
And it is a much better show. You were alluding to this once they get out of the pods.
It's absolutely like, to me, look, we're so deep into reality television and into dating reality television. I no longer believe in the pure way that I did in like early seasons of The Bachelor, that people are genuinely going to fall in love. I now understand that the reality television show is for most people a way station out of Charlotte to something a little bit bigger. And look, maybe someone will F around and fall in love. That might happen. It might last. You know, you might have a Cameron and Cameron and his wife from the first season.
Sure.
It could happen. Married at First Sight has had a couple of real successes. Obviously, The Bachelor's had some successes. But by and large, I don't view it for that anymore. And so if you are not fully invested in the falling in love, it's hard to really feel much in those first two or three episodes, especially when you, as the outside observer, are looking at Clay and AD, or alternately, Matthew and AD,
right.
And AD is absolutely losing it, and you're sort of like, sis.
But then it becomes quite a good documentary about relationships.
Yes.
It's like the show is as if Hometowns and Fantasy Suite episode of The Bachelor was stretched out and like slightly more verite.
Yes.
Like less zhuzh.
Yes.
And I think like
with some contrivances of being in a room with all your exes.
With all your recent exes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like it is, I do think in a way that I appreciate a lot of reality TV, like it's reflecting back, like the fights feel like real fights mm-hmm. that average couples have.
Yeah.
And it's like a pretty good, and it like holds its gaze. It just like the fights go on so long.
Yes.
And it's just like, we're just going to let these people work through it. And you watch them be mad and you watch them get madder. You watch them come down. You watch them try to say, I still love you. You know, it's like, it's good documentary television in moments.
So to me, the main quality fighting on this episode, on this season is Jimmy and Chelsea.
Sure.
Chelsea needs what appears to be a tremendous amount of consistent affirmation.
She's very insecure.
Yes.
Specifically around her looks.
Yes. And Jimmy does not speak the full English language. Like, does not have a full complement of vocabulary words.
He's a twang like 20% of the time.
Oh, yeah. No, yes. He's
like I couldn't
like get Mark Ronson.
I couldn't get a read. It's not transatlantic, though. I'll say that.
A British twang. Yeah, Jimmy, one thing that I truly was struck by during this season, look, you're in a relationship, I'm in a relationship, like I've been in a relationship.
Oh, we're going there?
No, I'm just saying like, but thinking about the nature of fighting and the nature of disagreement,
mm-hmm.
there's always going to be some small portion of disagreement in any relationship where you're just like either mishearing or not quite grasping what the other person is saying, and then you're reacting to that misunderstanding or misapprehension.
Yeah.
And in a perfect world, you sort of immediately like walk it back, unravel it and say, okay, that not, or that like,
it's not what you meant.
It's not that. Okay. I can in through the nose, out through the mouth. We can undo that. I watch these people talk to each other and I'm literally like, how do you know what you're mad at? Like no one here is forming complete sentences. Everything is fragments. Everything is suggestions or nods or like, you know, it's like some combination of sounds and short words. How do you know what you're mad at? Like, I'm at the point, I'm like refereeing.
You're hyperverbal.
I know I am, but like.
I think this is, welcome to the world.
that's just how people are.
Hasn't 2 decades of reality television taught you that?
This feels like a low.
Really?
I mean, look, I watch a
more
lot.
Than The Bachelor. These people seem more emotionally intelligent to me than the majority of contestants on The Bachelor.
I don't even know if I agree with that. I mean, I've watched The Bachelor a few seasons, but like I couldn't have been more shocked over and over again watching Jimmy attempt to form sentences and constantly Chelsea being like, I'm mad at that thing you said. And I'm like, I need a translator. Like,
I did watch with the subtitles.
Did you? Yeah. It probably helped.
Yeah, it did.
Also, Clay,
yeah.
Just the way, like, talking with his eyes constantly and never having a complete sentence, like starting on one thought and then immediately pivoting to another one, then yep. Immediately an AD just like, I'm rocking with you. And I'm like, rocking with what?
A lot of catchphrases from everyone. Like, you really see, especially like, I've been watching some older reality television simultaneously. I've been doing a big Below Deck binge and like starts, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. And you see, and same with Survivor, like you really see the evolution of language and how like internet homogenized people's speech patterns and idioms are now. Yeah. Like you just didn't get the same level of like slang catchphrase.
Yeah.
In previous generations of reality TV. Whereas what you're saying, yeah, like everyone is speaking in like shorthand, like, you know, Laura is a big one of these. Like everything is like TikTok brain in a very intense way.
Yes.
Creating, I wish you the best.
Same.
Go kick rocks with open-toed f***ing shoes.
I do want to go back to one fight that carries through the season for Chelsea and Jimmy that I thought was both very graspable, but also like rubbing up against the line of like, how immoral is this show and reality television in general?
Oh, yeah.
Which is bringing in his friend from home, his best friend who has a cameo.
Okay, but low key, when that cameo happened,
you knew
the first thing I was sitting on the couch and I turned and I said, one of them.
Like, I just female best friends.
Just put a marker on it.
They're presented as sisters, basically his sisters. And then later in the show, in a heated moment, she says, I know you had sex with one of them. And he says, what are you doing? I told you that off camera. This is one of my deepest, darkest secrets. I'm protecting her.
Yes.
I'm protecting her. And now it's out there for everyone. And that's like that basically breaks them up. He's like, I cannot marry someone
who is immoral,
who did this to me and to her like that. When we'll get to Clay and AD, because that's the other main through line of the season.
Yeah.
Which also has some heavy, like, should I really be watching this moments? But like, that was
real. That felt real.
That felt real.
That's interesting. That didn't feel as real to me as the sort of like not fully verbal fight where he's like, can you imagine? The right one is like,
calls it clingy.
No, that was pretty straightforward. No, but there's one like right before the end where he's like, can you imagine getting married? And like, I kind of feel like he's setting her up for a yes. And then she gives a yes. And then he like flips it and turns it into a no.
I mean, but that's like, the whole climax of the show.
But it's crazy to me. I'm like, how do people not know how to like lead narrative conversations with each other?
The answer is no.
Yes, I agree that it was good television, but it felt, he was off camera for most of that.
That fight.
He was like behind a wall or something. Or like in the bathroom or something. Yeah. To me, maybe it's because he was holding back a little bit. Well, because he didn't want to drag it out.
You know
the cameras are there.
The central narrative of the show becomes about somebody who didn't sign up to be on the show. Like who agreed to be in a scene, but was supposed to be a superficial scene and then became.
But also maybe low-key wanted to, like, this is the other thing. It's like,
I haven't gone to her social
media. Charlotte, look, I'm just saying reality television in Charlotte is a hell of a drug.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying if that's like, it might've been a lane.
Yes.
And maybe that person wanted to interject themselves into the mix. Maybe they wanted to be a spoiler.
You wanted to talk about the earlier breakup in the season.
Yeah, Brittany and Kenneth, who basically made it about 20 minutes after the honeymoon.
Because he wouldn't get off his phone.
And like, honestly, like, who can relate?
He was like, I'm so happy to have my phone back. I mean, he wasn't looking at her. Like, he would not register that she was speaking to him.
No, and literally would, like, be on his phone while... And, like, frankly, who amongst us? I'm not saying I've never done that. I don't do it a lot. I've certainly been in... I've certainly experienced that from other people. It's yeah. not a great feeling. The other thing about Britney is I felt like... Look, from what I read online or saw on TikToks, there's a chance that the actual breakup scene with them... was filmed,
yes.
Was purpose filmed. It had already happened off camera.
Right. Like a lot of great reality television.
We regret to inform you.
reenactments.
Yes. But yeah, Kenneth did not seem interested. Kenneth wanted a friend. He got a friend.
Yeah.
Today or yesterday, they put out a TikTok together,
yep.
implying that they were occupying the same space.
Hanging out. Yeah.
But like,
it seemed like promo for the reunion.
Yeah, it's probably, I feel like it's unlikely that they are together.
Yep.
Also, they're both like 24.
Yeah.
That's the other thing is like people, most of them are like 28, 29,
way
30,
too young to be getting married.
24 and 25 is crazy work.
In this
context, it's crazy work.
Well, that too.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, do you want to talk more about Matthew or want to go straight to Clay and AD?
I think Clay and AD is...
The Clay AD is good,
but that's the plot. That's AD is a star of the season.
AD is the star of the season, and it's important maybe before we talk about Clay and AD, it's important we talk about the moment where Clay realizes that the other person who has purchase on AD's heart is Matthew.
Yeah, he's shook.
He shook for a couple reasons, and it's great because he's sitting there, he's in the middle of there's three guys on three seats next to each other. It's him. It's Kenneth, and it's some white guy who's like clearly there to be the sidekick. And Clay is like upset. He's like, trying not to cry. He's like holding it together. He doesn't understand. He's like looking at Matthew, who's like a very like bookish looking, socially awkward white guy.
Yeah.
And he's looking at himself and he's like, you know, like I'm star athlete, like swagged out. Like,
it's like come this guy?
Right. He's literally like this guy. And then he's like, what does this guy have that I don't?
It's like he won't
what
say anything.
Don't I have? Like, what do I like? Am I wrong about AD?
Scrambles
like,
his brain.
It absolutely does. But my favorite moment was he looks at the random white guy. And he's like, I'd understand if it was someone like of your caliber. And that guy is like, yeah, yeah, I know. And I'm just like, nice save, but no.
I do like that.
And he didn't say anything to Kenneth, right. Pointedly.
In the Nick Lachey, who's the host of this show, with his wife.
With Vanessa Minnella.
In the tagline where they're like, they do say like, will race tear them apart, basically. In their list of like four things
yes.
that might break up a couple.
Yes.
We got a
taste of that with Brittany and Kath.
This season. And with Amy and...
very glancingly with Amy and Johnny.
Yeah.
AD is the star. My favorite post-show AD revelation, quote unquote. And again, it's like the TikTok ecosystem for Love is Blind, both from the participants themselves, from people digging into their social media past, from
people who know them
exes,
popping up.
Exes yeah. giving interviews to random podcasts. I mean, the number of podcasts about Love is Blind, talk about award winning. There should be an award for best Love is Blind spoiler podcast. Someone said that during the entire 6 weeks of the experiment, AD never worked.
Why would she work?
She has two jobs.
I didn't know they were supposed to be working.
Yes, that's like Clay, the whole thing between
them. Oh, yeah.
Was Clay's like, I've got to go gas up my jet skis. Right.
And then, sure. And, but that was like, it didn't seem like they were working full time.
No, of course. But like the point being that like, there's a point where Clay is like, I didn't totally understand her finances.
I mean, we'll go, yeah. That's,
no, I know.
That ends
but
up
I just,
being his ultimate red flag. Like when he does the cruelest thing that's ever been done to anyone on television to her. He's like, I didn't fully understand her finances. Like something that he never previously mentioned.
Finances, I kind of looked at it, brushed it off. But finances is huge to me, and I don't really understand her finances like that.
Let's get to the altar. Let's get to the altar. These
Clay
two.
And AD, yeah, we'll skip Amy and Johnny. Only Clay and AD.
Doomed from the start.
Literally, AD presents herself as someone who is always in the position of saving or rescuing a man who is not good and not good enough, but not ready. Not ready to deliver what she needs, not ready to give to her the level of commitment
and also emotional
succor. Yeah. Emotional succor that she provides to others. Part of the reason she was attracted to Matthew, in theory, is he was the opposite. He was a little dry, but he was the opposite. He was going to be sturdy for her. Clay, in the early episodes, very clearly plays in her into her problems, quote unquote. But as Matthew disappears, she just immediately pivots and is like, I'll be your rock. I'm going to support you. I'm going to love you regardless, even though you're through your failures. And he's literally like, I might cheat. And she's like, I'm going to love you through your failures. I've got your back.
He says it like 100 times.
Literally, do you think he cheated in track two? Do you think they're going to have to run the tapes?
I mean,
I'm just saying, he was very adamant that he was going to cheat.
His father would be very disappointed.
Or, so part of Clay's narrative is that his father cheated on his mother.
Yeah.
And his father used to bring Clay, like, on missions.
Infidelity
missions, and make Clay keep it secret from his mother.
Right.
Which apparently he told his mom during this taping.
And which then the mom confronts the father about.
Like, one of the best scenes of the season.
And of reality, like, it's like, this is what I mean when, like, every now and then it would hit on what felt like
something real, so true.
Real documentary about love.
We came from broken families. That doesn't mean that we have to pass on that brokenness to our kids.
Absolutely. Stop the bleeding, stop the cycle.
Right. Your past and things that you witness is part of your DNA, it's part of your inside. And if you don't get freaking help, you bring that shit to the next thing.
Cataracts are the world's leading cause of avoidable blindness. The metaverse can help address that problem. A virtual reality platform created by Fundamental VR and Orbis International helps train doctors to treat cataracts, resulting in more confident surgeons operating all over the world. With virtual reality training, surgeons can practice over and over to gain skills. Meta and the metaverse are having impact today.
You see, like, him interacting with his father, him become a little boy in the presence of his father, who has screwed him up by his own telling, how much love he has with his mother, and then his mother and his father, who are divorced.
Yes.
Talking about their failures and how they've passed them on to their son.
Yeah.
Which is just like...
Yeah, I mean, she was after the altar. I mean, we'll talk about what happened at the altar, but after the altar, the mom says to the dad, like, essentially what he did up there, that's on you. You did that to him. He carried your BS up there with him. So anyway, at the altar...
I do.
When did he decide? He's smiling and happy and acting like he's gonna...
That's what I'm saying. People don't have grip on narrative.
When did he decide that he
decided
was
like
gonna
3 weeks,
no?
3 weeks prior.
But then what is he doing? Pretending like he's gonna marry his...
He had TikTok on the vision
board. Is that a real marriage? Like, is that legal, or is that like for the show and you're gonna get married after?
I think they are...
Is it binding?
I think it's...
Because they do get a marriage
they
license.
They get a marriage license. I think it's binding.
Okay. He does a runaway bride on her. Like, he literally says no at the altar after giving his vows.
Giving
his speech.
But this isn't the first... To be fair, this isn't the first time that has happened on Love is Blind.
But his demeanor...
Because he doesn't understand, like, his... He speaks in automaton speak. Like, he doesn't speak in affectionate speak. He speaks in automaton speak. I genuinely thought it could go either way.
Here's the thing.
As I'm watching him talk, I was like,
I knew what was going to happen when I watched it.
Because you spoiled.
I had seen spoilers online.
Yeah.
So I was watching for the exact moment that he stopped pretending he was about to marry this person and
never came
and said, and it came literally like half a second before he said, like, I can't do this.
But that's, I feel like that's part of the Love is Blind proposition.
He ruined her life.
No, he saved her life. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
He absolutely
he
saved her life.
He ruined the lives of her nieces.
But that's...
Who were children.
Wait, you're sure you've watched this show before?
I've never seen it like to that. It felt so...
I've seen bad ones.
That bad?
Yeah, I've seen bad ones. I wish I could remember. I wish I knew. I would have planned differently. But like, I've seen bad ones. And also, the thing about Clay And actually, this
she
is...
She wanted it so bad.
No, but here's... This is the thing about Clay. Is I think Clay was like, how can I be super player about this? I'm going to walk right up to the door. And then instead of saying I'm opening the door, what I'm going to say is, actually, how about you come to my side of the door?
Yeah, he was like, we're going to keep dating.
We're going to keep dating. Like, there's that part after them, after the after he dumps her, where he goes to see her in the suite or whatever. He's like, do I really have to leave? Like, he really was like,
he really thought it was cool.
He really was like, I'm going to get away with it. Like, I'm going to get away with it. Like, I'm such a catch that she's going to absolutely consent to my extended timeline.
And
to be fair, look,
yes,
there is
they should keep dating if they want to get married.
This one, but also, like, there is a universe where, frankly, if you are a better communicator, perhaps in this context, you could say, you know how I feel about
you. At the altar?
Yes, at the altar, you say, you understand how I feel about you. I understand how you feel about me. You understand that we're in a strange circumstance. You know I'm committed to you. That said, don't you think it would be better if we took a little bit more time? We say no to each other right now, and then we say yes down the line. That's an option. I think I've seen people
Colton
try.
Pulled that off on The Bachelor.
So it's not impossible. It's just not within the reach. It's not within the...
Can't do it after you exchange rings.
No, but it's not within the discursive reach of this particular group of people, I don't think.
I found it to be earth-shattering.
Really?
Followed by with the 1-2 of then the parents' conversation.
I guess I was just so relieved for AD.
Okay.
Like, look, AD, obviously, a person of incredible emotional quality, yeah. But who, I think...
Has a bad pattern.
Has a bad... Dating. Is rightly asking herself, why am I choosing these people? But I think is just getting from the point of why are these people treating me poorly to what is it about me right. that is seeking this kind of
person.
And
now she has the game tape to watch
literally,
over, and yeah, over and over again.
Absolutely. And hopefully this can be part of the thing that allows her to identify whatever that pattern is. So I did not have, I was not heartbroken at all. Like, I was literally relieved on her behalf. Like, obviously it's heartbreaking television, but I was just like, this is how it was supposed to go.
It never should have gotten to that point, as it didn't for most of the other couples.
Look, that said, if you found yourself in the Charlotte area, would you rent?
Come on,
would you rent a jet? Would you rent a no? Would you rent a jet ski from Clay?
You think this was all in service of his small business?
I'm not saying he was in service of it. I'm just simply saying, would you rent a jet ski from Clay?
No, I'll never give this man my business. Not for what he did to those little girls. They're just like, it's like cut to the crowd. And these children are just like, you can do that?
Have these children never watched reality television? By that age, if it was me, I would have already seen like 20 reality television. No, that's absolutely nonsense. Here's what I think Clay should be doing. Clay should be doing Love is Blind, behind the scenes, jet ski vacations. I think if you rent a jet ski for 2 or 3 hours, it includes 30-minute Q&A session with Clay where you can ask him all the real stuff.
You're going
speaking
into
of faith, here's the thing. Speaking of faithfuls and traitors, that's my Alan Cumming. AD and Clay, that's an ultimate faithful and traitor pairing.
And just throw them on season 3, season 4. Like, Love is Blind contestants should be thrown into the ring to be on the traitors.
Certainly the ones who dumped people at the altar.
Yeah. You think he could pull it off? I don't think, like, it's
no, so I don't think Clay can pull it off, yeah. But I think, I low-key think Jimmy might be able to pull it off.
You would make Jimmy a traitor or a faithful?
I would make Jimmy a traitor.
No way. He can't lie.
No, but it's like he can't tell the truth either. Like, Jimmy's relationship to, like, the truth value of words is nil. Like, it's not that he's lying or not lying. It's that he actually just doesn't know what he's saying at any given time. And most people would literally be like, what do you think Jimmy's on? And people would be like, I have no idea.
It's true that some people on The Traitors are too bright to be on the show. And, like, it sort of breaks the show in various ways.
I'm going to take care of her once and for all.
There's no friendships in this game.
I find you highly annoying.
It's just a ton of chaos.
Hold on to your kilts, deities. The games are just beginning.
Too much?
I had not seen, so we'll pivot to Traitors now. I still haven't seen season one.
Okay.
I only watched season two at your urging, at Karen's urging. A number of people assured me that I would love this show.
Really? I don't think I assured you, because I'm of mixed opinion of the show.
Oh, okay. Or I think assured me I would be interested in the show.
I think it's worth watching. Yes. Did you disagree?
I think I ended up really liking it, but it was a slow start for me, the first two or three episodes. It really doesn't kick in until Dan really kicks it. So anyway, explain what Traitors is, and I'll explain one flaw in the conceit that...
There's a lot of flaws in the conceit.
That really ended up, I think, proving to be a challenge for me over the course of the season. But explain what Traitors is.
So this is a Peacock show.
I subscribed to Peacock.
I cannot believe you didn't have Peacock. How do you watch Below Deck?
On Bravo Linear.
Oh, you have like
on demand or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the second season just ended of a Peacock original.
You're a cord cutter? You have no cable?
I have no cable.
Seriously?
I've never had cable in my life.
God, I feel like...
I have YouTube TV, which is basically cable.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, wow. We'll talk about this after.
YouTube TV.
Maybe.
Great. Subscribe to podcasts while you're on it.
Yeah, it's not YouTube. Not to be confused with YouTube. This is a show that's been ongoing in the UK and in Australia.
Okay.
And what it did in the second season, which it didn't do in the first, is essentially cast all reality TV people. The thing that made the...
With a couple of exceptions.
They're like notable.
Right, right, right. They're not randos.
No. In the first season, which I watched because featured a few Survivor players, namely Ciri, Fields, a Survivor legend, mm-hmm. One of the great game players mm-hmm. of all time. And it was half reality TV people and half regular people playing a game where they live in a Scottish castle, allegedly Alan Cumming's. I haven't done the deep dive on, like, do they actually stay in a hotel or, like, are they really staying in the castle?
Oh, interesting.
Like, what's going on with the right. set? It has, like, a campy medieval, you know, fire brimstone.
Alan Cumming's really serving.
As the host.
Serving.
Going crazy.
Absolutely going dummy with the looks. Going absolutely dummy.
And the lines and the... You know,
I mean, really playing into it, but also, like, I think the looks are, like, authentically good. The lines are obviously overwrought, but the looks are authentically good.
But in the first season, it was really interesting to watch regular people get worked by somebody who's played Survivor three or four times.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and that some people were fans, some people were randos. And this is a game where three-ish people are made traitors. The rest of the cast doesn't know. They're referred to as faithfuls. And the traitors are murdering people behind the scenes.
Yes. One person per night.
And also the whole cast is voting in front of each other who they believe a traitor to be.
Yes. Trying to banish them.
So basically two people leave every episode. They're trying to weed out the disloyal people. The audience knows who everybody is.
And if a traitor makes it to the end, they're earning money and challenges. And if a traitor makes it to the end,
they steal the pot.
They steal everything. And if only faithfuls make it to the end, they split amongst themselves.
Correct. Inelegant game. The gameplay of this is a
funky.
Mess.
It's funky.
The challenges go on way too long.
Yeah.
They're not real challenges. Like, it's sort of like The Mole, which is...
I was thinking a lot about The Mole.
A huge favorite of mine from childhood.
Also, shout out Anderson Cooper and shout out Alex Wagner.
Yes.
Shout out Alex Wagner. Slept on.
Incredible. Both hosts of The Mole. Mm-hmm. The Mole was interesting because The Mole was actively trying to harm them in the challenges.
And I sort of was wondering if that was going to come into play. But obviously, if the incentive is that everybody gets money, regardless if they're a traitor or faithful, everybody's incentivized to get money.
Yes.
So it kind of ruins that, like, the potential for disruption.
And the challenges are largely fake. Like, they basically always basically get it. Yeah. There's a lot of jokes about the clock.
Yes.
It's like the longest seconds of all time mm-hmm. to allow them to always get the money right at the buzzer.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make a lot of sense. The game, it's similar to early seasons of Survivor in that, like, it's very primitive right now. Like, you don't know whether the traitors should be working together or apart. The voting is like pretty random. There's not this season, the second season.
There's not a lot of, unlike Survivor, the thing about Survivor that obviously is so refined at this point is people understand the power of alliances. Yeah. I need 3 votes. I need 5 votes.
And voting blocks.
Yes. And that is not really come into play. And I thought this show, this season especially, I'm like, halfway through, I'm like, you guys should be forming gangs and cliques.
And they sort of did.
It happens, but everybody's yes. mistrusting each other yep. and they're falling apart. But it's not quite as dramatic as it is on Survivor. Yep.
So second season comes out. It's basically all reality TV people.
And
so,
the former Speaker of the UK House of Commons. Shout out my
guy. And then a random boxer.
Who left? Because he was crying. He was crying, constantly crying.
I haven't Googled this, but who is Kevin? Why is he there?
Yeah, Bling Empire.
Okay. But he's like an actor.
He's in the family that Bling Empire focuses on, and then he turned that into acting.
Okay.
I believe. I'm not up on that part of the Bravo Nation.
Big Housewives contingent.
Notably.
They upped it this yep. time. You got Phaedra, you got Sheree, mm-hmm. you got Tamara.
Yep.
Last season had Brandy Glanville. Mm-hmm. And then Survivors.
Yes.
Parvati and Sandra.
Big Brother Dan.
Couple
Janelle,
Big Brother people.
The Challenge, CT and Trishelle.
And Real World. It's funny yeah. that they're only identified as Challenge people at this point when like their roots are in the Real World.
Yes, that's true. But at this point, I mean, look. Yeah, I mean, can I just take 20 seconds to say CT is one of the greatest athletes of the 21st century.
Yeah. On the Challenge.
Yeah. Just like, and I don't mean that even like hyperbolically at all. Like, this is where we play the CT Johnny Bananas back to back like thing where he like,
this kid's a monster and it's going to take everything that I've got to weather his storm.
I don't care who it is. I'm just going straight for the barrel. Get this party going.
All right, boys, keep it clean. You ready? Go!
I was going to say, are you a Johnny Bananas guy?
No, it's CT all the way.
He got banished right away, so I didn't really get to know Johnny Bananas. I used to watch some Challenge, but I'm not like a...
Like once Johnny Bananas really became the character, absolutely fell off for me. Early Johnny Bananas was good when
he's like
just
the like Boston Rob of the Challenge.
Sort of. I mean, I would say him or CT can function like that, but Johnny Bananas at a certain point like became a personality, and then he like hosted a show on NBC. He had like a whole like I'm a personality guy.
Sure.
CT to me is an earnest blue collar laborer who happens to be burdened with the gift of being exceptional at only one kind of athletic endeavor, which happens to be challenges on reality competitions.
Like meaningless games, adult games.
Yeah, like I don't know if he's any good at football or soccer or basketball or lacrosse. I have no idea, but I know that he works the hell out of this particular kind of challenge. CT, one of the great regrets of my freelance career is I really wanted to write a long form profile of CT.
You might now be able to.
Yeah, it's genuine.
The door has reopened.
What truly like what an iconic figure.
It's amazing seeing him.
Also the arc with DM back in the day and her passing. I'm just, I don't know if he's a good person as a person, but as a character, an incredible person.
Yeah, as somebody who saw him on The Real World as a kid, like seeing him now in middle age, like it's quite moving in the same way that like if you stuck with Survivor, like when I was a kid, you know, Colby from season 2 of Survivor, I'm like, oh, like that's a cowboy, that's a superhero, you know what I mean? And then seeing him reckon with his mortality in, you know, later Legends seasons of Survivor, it's just like, it's super jarring. You know, I've been watching these people on reality TV my whole life.
No, and like, you know, for everybody who sort of like poo-poos reality television, it's like there is an incredible narrative power. You do buy into someone when you see them in these kind of semi-vulnerable or quasi-vulnerable contexts. And I think even someone, it's funny because I was thinking about Alan Cumming as the TJ Lavin of this, right? Sure. Even TJ Lavin, who had like health challenges and kind of got like,
or
that's a character.
Or an Andy, or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. Although preps will never
Yeah, he doesn't crack.
He doesn't crack, although I feel like low-key something's up with Probst. But, like, I just, in my heart, I feel like something's up. Like Princess Kate. Like, I just feel like something's up.
You're forensically looking.
Yeah, I'm checking. I'm doing the Photoshop. I'm doing the Bellingcat on Probst. Yeah. There's something going on.
I don't even know what you're referring to.
That's okay. Just Google it. Everybody Google it.
No, I mean with the Probst thing. I don't know what you're like. What could possibly...
I just feel it. Okay. In my gut, I feel it.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
Just look. Put a pin in it. We'll come back to
it. So what they did in the second season was, instead of regular people and reality people, it's basically half people who play reality show games, mm-hmm. and they coined the term, seemingly it just like happens.
Gamers.
And they're gamers.
Yeah.
And then there's the Bravo celebrities, basically, yes. on the other side. Or yes. people who don't play, who may be on reality TV, but don't compete on reality TV.
Oh, they compete.
So this is the thing, because the Housewives really held their own. I mean... I want to hear about your experience diving into the Traitors universe, but early on, I was blown away by how good Larsa was at the game. Larsa's there good. With Michael Jordan's son, her boyfriend.
Are they still together?
So they broke up as the season was airing, but then on their reunion, they're like, we're piecing it back together. Okay. Like, we're in a good place.
Got it. Okay.
They talk about it.
I think we just hit like a little speed bump. We were moving 100 miles per hour, and we hit a speed bump and needed to kind of reset, regroup, and kind of talk through some stuff, but we're doing fine now.
We're like working on our problems.
Yeah.
And I feel like now we're communicating better and we're in a better place.
Phaedra, she's the AD of Traitors. Like, she's the main character of the season.
Unbelievable. Such presence. A lawyer in real life and a funeral director in real life.
Incredible.
Also, if I'm not mistaken, formerly Bobby Brown's lawyer. And this is a random anecdote, but when I started at Vibe in 2006, I'm pretty sure the first cover that we did was a Bobby Brown cover. It was like kind of like, you know, like what can we do relatively quickly? And if I'm not mistaken, the contact was Phaedra.
Wow.
If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm sorry, but I'm like 80 to 90% sure the contact was Phaedra.
Incredible.
Yeah. She's lived a lot of lives.
She's lived a lot of lives. And she, I think, as somebody who is not really tapped in with the Housewives, like I'm not a Housewives viewer.
I am not. I gave up.
So the person who did this in the first season and broke out was Kate Chastain from Below Deck.
Yes.
Like, that I was always going to watch Below Deck at a certain point in my life. Kate on season one made that time now.
Yeah.
Just like...
Oh, that was your prompt.
Yeah. Like, again, I was already coming.
Got it.
But she was like... Okay. I was like, okay, I need to know more everything about this person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I need to go from the beginning. I think Phaedra had that effect this time. And of course, they bring back Kate in season two. Mm. What did you think of the Traitors diving in the second season?
Okay. It was very clear that the Traitors learned from Big Brother in the sense that they need a character who is also a narrator. This is why Dan is useful. Big Brother Dan, who won once and made it to the final two a second time in an all-star season. Dan is a very like regular looking, unassuming, affable guy who keeps to himself, but stirs up the pot. And what Dan is an incredibly effective narrator. He learned from Big Brother Confessional how to look square at the camera, say, this is what I'm doing. This is what everyone else is doing. Here's how it all fits together. Here's where I've been. Here's where I think we're going. And the fact that he does that so clear to camera, but in the game, he's a little bit hands-off. He functions as sort of he's the Greek choir in
sure.
a way. So obviously, it's a really effective choice to have the two traitors in the beginning, him and Phaedra, one from each of the camps. And it's very striking to see how they interact with each other, because Dan is truly the ultimate gamer. Dan, he's working angles constantly. Phaedra, she's doing a different version of it. But Phaedra is a lot more tribal in the sense that she's like, I have my team.
Yep.
And like, I'm also on a team with you as the traitor, but like, I'm playing the game very differently.
And making new friends. You see her connecting with CT. You see her connecting with Bergie.
Phaedra CT reality show. Oh, like, yeah. Phaedra CT amazing race.
They were amazing in the reunion talking about their chemistry.
The sweetest relationship, because initially when he got in the car with us, our car kept breaking down.
Yes.
And I thought he was the mechanic.
I was the repo man and he was the mechanic.
I mean, just be honest. And so it was the most sweetest, innocent, connection ever.
So the fact that they come from two different places. Also, Dan, regrettably, is a tiny bit rusty.
He's horrible at traitors. He's horrible at playing the traitors.
He really slow-walked. Like, if he had been playing a hard game from day one, I think it might have turned out very differently. That. He learned it. I mean, he realized in real time. I went on his Wikipedia. Apparently, he's a Twitch streamer now.
Oh, wow.
Like, he does, like, video game Twitch streaming.
Okay.
Who knows?
He says, like, my whole thing in Big Brother is, like, I hold back, I get a feel for everyone, and then I launch into game mode. But in this case, that resulted in every time someone's like, who do you think is a traitor?
He just freezes. Yeah. It's very like, strange.
Eventually.
He perversely not good at lying for someone whose entire success was predicated upon lying.
It was sad to see.
And what was particularly interesting is when he finally did the thing that he probably should have done, frankly, on like episode two.
Turn on Phaedra.
Like, if he's seen season one, he understands the function of the game. If he turns on Phaedra, someone else will be brought in. He'll have some say of who gets brought in.
Well, they already also have a third traitor at that point.
Oh, is that one?
Right. From...
Okay. But if he understands the gameplay and he sensed that Phaedra and he were not totally in rhythm with each other, he could have immediately made her target number one.
Yeah.
When he finally goes for her, on the one hand, I'm like, this is the kind of gameplay that this show is premised upon. And he actually, I thought in that moment, was good. But then the minute Phaedra just sort of like settles in, is like, are we going to war?
I mean,
she's like, all them Big Brother boys want to go to war? Well, then let's get ready. You know, like Pastor Troy blasting in the background.
She said, I'm doing too much because you're doing too little.
Incredible. And I think what Dan as a strategist underappreciated, because no one on Big Brother speaks clearly.
Right.
Like, these are not geniuses who play Big Brother. So it's easier for Dan or Dr. Will or whatever to manipulate people. Everyone in the Bravo universe is a talker.
Right.
This is an incredibly verbal show. It was traitors, I mean, incredibly verbal. It was actually shocking that they were mad at John, the UK Parliament guy, for being
talking
too
much.
Verbal. Yeah. I'm like, have you looked in the mirror? Everybody here is a talker.
And Parv called that out pretty early on, where she's like, we got to be careful with these Bravo people because they're performers.
But it's funny, they don't conceive of themselves as performers, but I'm like, ma'am, like, we are in the late, late, late reality television era. Like, you guys are performers, but everyone is verbal. But the way that the Bravo folks are verbal is so different from the way that the gamers are verbal.
Yeah.
It was actually really striking to see Sandra almost totally sidelined.
Yeah.
And then the minute that there was any light on her, got absolutely washed out the paint. Whereas you think Sandra is the number one person who's going to be able to like thread that.
Though it did get her very far in the game. Sandra, especially because, spoiler, survivor person was a traitor and won the first time.
Yeah.
Like, I think that really screwed Parvati, like making her a traitor. They should have both been faithfuls because the star traitor from season one was a survivor person, which puts a crazy target on you.
Yes.
Especially when you're known as a manipulative winner or multiple time winner in Sandra's case. So she really didn't have a chance, but she did, and she talked about this a bit in the reunion, like she played her survivor game, which is she didn't care if a faithful or a traitor got voted out.
Didn't matter.
Anyone but me.
Yes.
Which has always been Sandra's game, and like lying pretty low. And the fact that she managed to lie low despite the target on the back of survivor players. I mean, Parv took all the heat. Because she's also so flashy.
Speaking of flashy, can we just briefly talk about clothes?
You can talk about clothes.
Okay. So something that happens in a lot of reality television shows of different kinds, dating shows, milieu shows, whatever. But there is a unanimity of how people present themselves.
Sure.
Like even in Love is Blind, like the kind of like middle brow bro presentation. It's like, exactly. Like Jimmy out here in Lululemon pants. Sure. Like everybody's kind of, and it's not like Clay, obviously. Clay, where do you get your knit cardigans? Just drop it in the comments. I just would like to know where
you like
get
them?
You
like them?
They're interesting. I don't know if I like
them.
You just
want to know.
I'd like to learn more about the world from which those cardigans emerge. But even on Love is Blind, for the most part, people kind of dress the same. Obviously, if you're doing like Shaws of Sunset, those folks mostly dress the same. Like, you really get the sense of a group of people because most of them are dressing in a roughly unanimous consent way. The thing that I liked so much about Traitors is, like, it really felt like the UN. Like, yeah, everybody came.
A delegation.
Yeah, like, everybody came in the sort of traditional costume of their tribe, right, whether it be Bravo Housewives, whether it be, like, a random guy on Survivor or Big Brother. The Bachelor, who just, like, looked like The Bachelor.
Yeah, Peter.
Yeah, Peter.
Just doing his thing.
Yeah.
Pilot Peter.
And I really, really found it admirable that there wasn't some sense. Also, it's very clear that people had stylists, because when they showed up to breakfast in the morning, like, everybody was, like, absolutely turned out. And Parvati, the sets, the headpieces.
She made the headbands a thing. She went full Blair Waldorf.
Absolutely amazing. Like, it was a visual treat to watch this show, because I really liked seeing how each person brought the specifics of their backstory into their outfits.
But also great for someone like Parv or like Kate, who in their home shows have to wear a uniform,
yes,
basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Parv did her thing on many seasons of Survivor, mm-hmm, with the buff and the bathing suit,
yeah,
but, mm-hmm, you know, it's limited, mm-hmm, the amount of clothing they can wear. Kate's always in a uniform.
Yes.
But seeing them be able to express,
yeah, like,
themselves.
When Kate showed up in, like, the brown leather dress, yeah, like, absolutely.
And near the end when she's wearing the all white and
with the top,
like, you're dressed like a traitor. She's like, thank you.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I don't know if anybody's written about that, but it's a really, I think, one of the more powerful parts of the show, because you really, like, a lot of the narrative is embedded in the clothing. Like, when you're seeing, like, the Kevin, the Bling Empire guy, and you're like, he's like a little bit of a himbo, and he's dressed like a himbo. Right. Like, and it's like, he's like, yeah, like, it's unselfconscious.
Right. So
admirable.
The traitors get spotted pretty quickly in this season. The game is sort of broken very early on.
Is that different than it was in the first season?
Yes, for sure.
Okay.
I mean, they know,
because now I feel like I'm going to go back and watch the other ones.
Yeah,
like,
some foreign ones. Yeah. Yeah. They know off the bat it's Parv. They know off the bat it's Dan.
Phaedra lays extremely low.
Phaedra lays
partially
low.
Because no other Bravo person would believe that,
but
it could be.
People are also onto her. Like, Trishel, as soon as Dan turns on Phaedra,
yeah,
like, he did that because she's also a traitor.
Which was the most obvious thing. I can't believe no one listened to Trishel.
They call out the eye tick.
Listen to... Which then continues to recur.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't, like, compensate for it. Like, she keeps doing it.
They change the rules a bunch to basically keep some of these people in the game longer. They bring in Kate. They let Parv stay, like, two more episodes after she's definitely going to get found out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Peter's leading the charge, sort of, like, has a little alliance, and they're
picking people out. And lays a trap. The thing that
a trap that works.
But this was baffling to me. He lays a trap where he doesn't say who got the shield, which, like, protects people from getting whatever. But he doesn't say. And it's, like, it's him. Essentially, it's him and Berkey, who's, yeah, like, from Love Island. I've not seen that season of Love Island.
I want to watch his season.
Yeah. I love the idea of him being thrown to the wolves.
Yeah.
But essentially, there's, like, six people involved in this scam, but it's really just Peter and Berkey. But immediately, Dan and Parv are like, he's lying. But then
Parv calls it out.
But, okay, so Parv.
And he does, and Dan steps into the trap.
Okay, I thought they agreed.
No. She's like, so by the way, he's trying to double cross us.
So
and he's like, but I still got to get Berkey.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Okay, I thought they both thought he was lying.
So bad.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
He was so bad at the game.
Rusty.
Anyway, this brings us sort of to the end and how the game, it doesn't really know how to wrap up.
Well, they did. I will say, so should we say who won? We say...
Yeah, sure.
So, okay. So, ultimately, CT and Trishel win. But in the episodes leading up to the end, where they were explaining how the money gets allocated, I was thinking, what a great time for an alliance to emerge and absolutely box out everybody else. And so, it turns out that after they finally accept that Kate is a traitor and get rid of her...
She gives up, basically. She votes to end the game even though there's a traitor left.
Yeah.
When everybody knows... that there's a traitor left.
Yes.
So she's basically like, and she says it, and she says it after, and she said it on Twitter. She was just like, I didn't want to play anymore. Like, they deserve the money. Like, yeah. I was barely in the show. Like,
which is a flaw of the show. That
huge
you can do
flaw
that.
Of the show.
But then this next thing, which I thought was sort of an interesting twist, once you're down to just the faithful, whoever many are left,
there were three
CT, Trishel, and MJ. But if it was three or five or seven, you have to keep eliminating people or until you come to an agreement that everybody who's left is a faithful and you want to share the money equally. Now, I'm thinking, what a great time for an alliance to box people out. But I'm like, I guess there's no way that will actually happen. And then it happened.
But they did it by accident.
By accident.
They okay, so Trishel and CT go way back.
Yeah.
They've known each other for 20 years. They've been on TV with each other many times.
I would love to do a Metrograph screening of the Real World Vegas season with Trishel.
Yes.
Just what an epic season.
Yes.
Really, really a great season. Highly recommend.
So they basically almost have full trust in each other, but have splintered in the previous vote. And then there's MJ.
She was there.
MJ was there.
MJ was
one of the great memes of the season is MJ sort of like bouncing in place, looking lost, which she carried all the way to the finale.
The thing about MJ that's very funny is every single vote, she was like, I know in my heart that so-and-so is a traitor, and I will be so broken if they turn out to be a faithful. And
every, she's wrong time, almost every time,
always wrong. And then every time she's like, this time, though. Yeah.
They could have easily just gotten her out because they knew they were all, they should have known they were all faithful.
Yeah.
Just vote to get her out so they could split the money one less way.
Yes.
Trishel crumbles, gets paranoid, votes against her CT. Closest ally in the game, CT. And then she says,
he looks broken.
She says she changed her vote the second time.
Of course.
They have a tie.
But also, MJ's not smart enough to have taken advantage of that, like seeing that that was happening. Also, they're so close to each other.
Of course. They
can't
know,
you see?
Especially when one person's name is only two letters
and the other person's like 10 letters.
MJ should have voted the first time for CT.
Yeah.
And then, she would have known.
Absolutely.
Anyway, but this became a huge controversy. CT and Trishel have been treated like absolute villains online. MJ was extremely angry at the finale.
Oh,
the
I thought it was good gameplay.
It was good gameplay, but accidentally. And this is where, like, it's a quite inelegant game. And it's like, I feel like if some puzzle minds sat down.
You need
like,
a game theory.
An
person.
Afternoon.
Yeah, you need a game theory.
Like, you
person.
Can fix the traitors. The traitors is good because of the mix of personalities, but it seems way more fun to play than it is to watch.
Okay, but here's why the traitors for me did not work that much. I would like to see an episode, a season of The Traitors where no people have pre-existing public personalities. Or no public personalities.
Oh, all regulars.
All regulars.
But that's, I think that's what the Australian version is.
Okay, and the reason is I'm so busy either expecting a certain kind of gameplay from each individual or triangulating my knowledge with how someone is actually playing.
Which they do to one another also.
Right, which is fine. But to me, you want character development. And frankly, there isn't any character development. Maybe Peter is the closest you have to
seeing
character
development. Seeing a non-gamer be
become
really good
a gamer.
At a game.
Yes.
Cool.
Or even like understanding that like seeing what Phaedra was doing as actually being a gamer, but just not in the way that any of the other folks could be. Like Phaedra was pulling a Sandra.
Yes.
But doing it with different language, different sartorial expression, different laying low, different ally, different alliance forming. She was doing a Sandra. But if you watch the Bravo universe, and I don't watch Housewives anymore, but I understand who those folks are. And like, I understand what roles they play in their home team, on their home team. It wasn't quite as exciting as like watching people form that stuff in real time. And that's one of my general frustrations with like all-star seasons of Survivor or Big Brother or whatever. You're never really going to get someone who's going to win twice anymore. Like it's really unlikely.
I mean, Tony pulled it off fairly recently.
Yes. Although there's something about Tony where I think people are just like the first one was dumb.
Yeah, they're like, this guy's going to be able to do it again.
Couldn't possibly happen. But it's also why I dislike Superfan. It's people who have such fixed ideas on the narrative of how the show is supposed to go and how you're supposed to play the show, especially with something like Traitors, which is a relatively new concept. I'd love to see it and watch people.
More raw.
And watch people like, it's like you inject the dye into the blood and you watch all the directions.
Yeah.
There are untested directions on this show. There should be more alliance forming. There should be more vote block stuff. There should be more traitors killing traitors. Yeah. Like there's so many things that have yet to happen, but I think it's going to be hard to have those things happen if everybody comes into the game with a pre-existing idea of how they're supposed to be.
This brings us, I think, to the new season of Survivor, which we'll do a couple minutes on just because it just started. Yeah. We're two episodes in when we're taping this. And Survivor in the modern era, we're at what's this 46?
46, I think.
Say the last, since COVID, the last four or five seasons.
All the Fiji stuff.
All the Fiji seasons. It has a casting problem. Survivor only casts one type of person now. And it's like touchy-feely, millennial, super fan. Everybody cries. Everybody's neurotic. Everybody's seen every episode and is constantly referencing other characters.
There's no jocks, really. There's no alphas.
There's no hot people. Like, Survivor used to be like, the early Survivor seasons are all smart people versus hot people for like the first five episodes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like, you just barely get that anymore. And like,
although I do think, just to briefly interrupt, the one thing that Survivor is successfully doing is diversifying the casting. It does feel, it feels like,
but it's all one type of.
I agree with, I do agree with that, but it's like, a lot of television, whether it's reality or scripted, is so kind of self-conscious about diversification. And I do think whenever there was like a CBS mandate, I think at a certain point, whenever that mandate went into effect, I think it actually really, really helped Survivor. Because I do think like you had very similar kinds of guys and girls on earlier seasons. And I do feel like it has spread that out a little bit. But that said, there are always people who are truly neurotic.
So
there are always people who are crying. There are always people who are failing in some emotional way.
I think I said this on a previous episode. It's like, it's almost all nerds. It's like 90% nerds.
Yes.
Now, which like, fine. Great. Mm-hmm. The nerd is a Survivor archetype. Mm-hmm. Like but Cochrane is a legendary Survivor.
Right. But it's an archetype because it was a one-off. Each season. Yes. I'm saying in earlier seasons, it was like, oh, that's the one or that's the two or they're in a the two are going to become relationship buddies.
And there's a couple like throwbacks. I think like they've started to bring back in the last season or two. A lot of old school Survivor stuff that they had cut out. Like they brought back the auction last year, the intro, you know, and I think a little bit in the casting choices, like you have Q in this one, who's like a Southern jock, basically, and is really good at everything, really personable. Like he's in the, you know, he's in the James mold from way back in the day. And he's sort of like he's a vintage Survivor player, but then he's surrounded only with this sort of new like tech employee Survivor contestant.
Right. And what's funny is you can see him struggling with that.
Yes.
So a team athlete, right? And literally looking at his team and being like, how did, like,
the guy he does the first challenge with just gives up.
Yeah. What draft was I in that this is who I ended up with?
Yeah.
And you could see it's breaking him. And he's so proud and so noble that he doesn't want to be broken. But it's like, he's literally like, why did you put me on island with literally no person who could do a single thing?
I just need the ratio to be corrected.
It's got to balance back out.
I need a better ratio because like it is so, I just cringe so much now watching almost every episode and it goes on so long. There's been bright spots over the last few seasons, but I really think we're in a casting rut, even though it's still like, it's only because they set the bar so high as being one of the best cast things
of course
ever. You know, it's like so, they've discovered so many people. The mixes are always insane. Like it just feels too samey. And I'm like a little out on this season because of that.
Yeah, I'm also right. And I'm out because I do think instead of triumph to triumph, it's really breakdown to breakdown.
Yes.
You know, like,
I mean, literally Bonu, the second episode,
Jess,
everybody cried. Yeah,
yeah.
Jess having a really hard time. Tears and tears and tears and tears.
Yes.
And it's very one note.
One other thing just that reminded me that I would like to see on the traders from coming from Survivor. Everybody's sitting at the round table. Why is there not more?
Yeah. Whispering
in people's ears and
who
like
are you voting for?
Last minute conniving, eye contact. Like everybody's so like sitting on ceremony.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, don't get messy.
Yeah.
Like if not now.
Nobody has disrupted traders yet in the American edition. I can't speak for the foreign versions, but it is really ripe for disruption. And somebody, if this show continues, which I think it will because of its popularity, like it is going to get Survivor it needs, Survivored or Big Brother.
It needs a Dan. And it needs a vintage Dan.
There's going to be some revolution within the Traitors universe, and I think it will be a way better show because of it.
Totally agree. No songs this week, since we're doing a little bit more of a themed episode.
I'm just going to listen to my Love is Blind playlist, which is some of the worst music ever created.
It's really, really bad. Astonishing. It
seems to be placed via keyword. Like, there's a database, and if somebody says, like, my mom got broken up with, then
there's like a song.
The lyric is like, my mama had her heart broken. You know, it's just like, it's so literal. It's the fakest. It's like somehow even faker than the fake Bravo music, which is like made in a sweatshop somewhere.
Do you think that those songs pre-exist, or you think that after the season is like edited, like roughly edited, they throw like a male singer, a female singer, a guy with a guitar, a guy with a piano, and like someone on drums into a studio and just make them watch it and do like a live play along.
I think it is made for the show, like the Bravo music.
I do.
I think it's like plucked from the cheapest possible library.
Did you Shazam any of it?
No, but like they say the artist on the screen.
No, I know. Did you Shazam it to see if anybody in history has ever Shazammed it before?
I will do that.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm gonna make the playlist.
If you do have a great song that you've learned about via like Love is Blind or
anything. There's no such thing.
Okay, I'd just be curious to hear it at podcast.com. So we're gonna go to snack. Last week, Sawyer had just come back from Brazil. Hit us with the lime and passion fruit Snickers, rare flavored regional Snickers. I also took a trip recently. I was in LA, and if the next question you're asking is, John, did you go to Erewhon? The answer is yes. If the next question you're asking is, John, at Erewhon, did you get the Hailey Bieber Skin Alive Shake for $21? The answer is also yes.
Is there a bowl and a smoothie?
I only had the smoothie.
Is there both?
I only saw a sign for the smoothie.
I've never been to Erewhon.
And if you're asking me, was it delicious? The answer is emphatically yes.
Wow.
Genuinely enjoyed it. Would love to have it near my house.
Legitimately healthy?
Sure. It had like a bunch of ingredients that I don't normally ingest.
Okay, that's what I figured.
So probably
that's
yes.
That's why I was surprised you liked it.
So I thought, where better to find a unusual off-brand snack to bring back to the show. And so what company, what's this called?
These are 12 Tides Organic Kelp Snacks.
I am so sorry. Puffed kelp chips.
What's in the compostable packaging.
That's a blessing.
What truffle and pepper flavor.
Sure. Have you ever had a kelp chip?
Not that I know of. Oh, of course. The compostable packaging is a paper straw. In that it doesn't work. You saw that.
That was very funny.
Tried to pull the tab.
That was legitimately very funny.
It crumbled in my fingers.
Okay.
All right. I really feel like we're doing these a disservice by eating them raw and not as a vehicle for like hummus or something.
No, but like, how are we going to know if the flavor hits or not?
They are
exactly, I don't want a hummus to mask it.
They're exactly the color that you think they are.
How's the smell?
I kind of like the smell. Truffly.
Okay. Is this our second truffled snack?
Truffle's big on the snack market.
No, I know, but I'm saying like it's our second.
Yeah, must be. I'm not even going to read the ocean positive packaging copy.
Oh, it is an interesting smell.
Yeah, I like the smell. What if they're really good?
I mean, I think they cost like $9.
No, I'm not eating another. If I was on a desert island and the helicopter came
on Survivor,
if I got voted off Survivor and they're like, sorry, you can't have a cheeseburger, all we've got are these kelp chips, I would be like, these are fine. But if I paid $9 for them, I would riot. They're disgusting.
Aren't they?
There's a lot of truffle flavor. Like, they're quite salty. They're very oceany.
It has this problem that a lot of chips that are not potato chips
sure
have, which is
fake chips.
Yeah, like this kind of like unanim this structure.
Yeah.
Where it's like everything is exactly the same width.
Yeah. They're very sturdy.
The shape is fake, obviously. Yeah. It's kind of like what's a scoopable shape? Like, yeah. You know, it's a fake shape.
Yeah. It looks like a giant Frito a little bit.
I do find the smell lightly tantalizing.
Sure.
It like the pepper.
Smells expensive.
The pepper really comes through in the smell. The chewing experience of it is really anticlimactic.
It's like deep fried cardboard.
It's joyless.
It's definitely joyless.
It's really joyless.
It's a 2 out of 10.
Maybe you're right with a scoop of something.
Yeah.
But it's sure. like.
As a vehicle, they wouldn't be the most offensive thing in the
world. But like, to be honest, I think a chip should be able to stand on its own.
Almost always. Not a healthy chip, though. A healthy chip is only edible with a topping or a dip.
I'm going to go 3.5. I find the peppery kick appealing.
It's a little spicy for you.
It is. I'm feeling like my tongue is like, hey, yo, like it's great. No, I like that part, but it's unimaginative. And it's not like if you are a parent giving these to your child.
I mean, you live in Los Angeles.
Yeah, is that the end of that sentence? Absolutely. Like they're going to be extremely upset when they learn about what the rest of the world is like. Yes. Simply what I want to say. That is our show. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. Joe and I are on Podcast Deluxe, youtube.com/podcast. Like and subscribe. Get the mugs and other ephemera. Get the doggy bowl on our Zazzle
skateboard
storefront. Get the deck on our Zazzle storefront. Just type in podcast. You'll see it. It's the podcast.myshopify.com is where the stickers are and so on and so forth. tinyurl.com/podcast Facebook and podcast Discord is where all the fans are congregating to ask questions. Email us. We're probably going to put a post on the Facebook and Discord to solicit questions. Email us, though, podcastnytimes.com with questions for upcoming mailbag episode or commentary about great reality television uses of music.
Sure. There's this thing now where the people watching The Hills and Laguna Beach and all that don't have the licensed pop songs from the day.
Oh, so are they like they're putting in filler music?
Oh, yeah. It's horrible. The youth doesn't know what they're missing.
I'm so
sorry. Buy physical media.
Literally. Wow.
Yeah. It's dark.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, email us podcast@nytimes.com. Our senior producer, Sawyer Roque. Pat Gunther's in the room today. Our editor is Jamie Heffett. Special thank you to Nell Galogli, Leslie Davis, Karen Gans, Pedro Rosado. We're going to be back next week. Okay.